You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to this special Times Higher Education podcast focusing on the 2014 THE World University Rankings. These are the big ones, the main event. Throughout the year, we have brought you our dedicated Asia rankings, the 150 ranking of new universities, the reputation rankings, and our alma mater index as well, which showed where the world's best business people studied. But today we're talking about the World University Rankings top 400, the most authoritative university rankings in the world. I'm joined by reporter Elizabeth Gibney and rankings editor Phil Beatty to look at some of the stories emerging from this year's tables. Phil, let's cut to the chase. Who's on top? Which countries have reasons to be cheerful?
Well, it's been a very stable year this year. We've actually got Caltech at the world number one for the third year in a row. Excuse me. It's the same top 10 as last year. Probably the most dramatic thing is that Harvard and Stanford have swapped places. There'll be some east-west rivalry coming in, but Harvard's regained second place, which it shares with Oxford. Mm-hmm. Stanford slipped to fourth. But it's been very stable. The top 30 is exceptionally stable, which as you'd expect with rankings. You want them to stabilise. It's a good sign. The methodology's solid. The much heralded shift of power towards the east is still apparent, but it's slowed. It's not quite as dramatic as we've seen, but we are seeing Singapore continuing to rise. China's top two have crept up. Japan's top institutions have risen as well, which I think is a bit of a surprise because Japan had been struggling a little bit in rankings. They'd always been dominant, but they'd been slipping, losing ground. South Korea does very well. Mm. So it's the usual story of Asia rising, but not quite as dramatic as in previous years. The UK, US have held on. They're very dominant in terms of numbers, but they've also held on pretty well as nations. Mm. Probably the biggest alarm bells, I think, are for lots of continental European countries. We've seen the top universities slip.
Yeah, Germany sees its top institutions fall, as do France, Switzerland, Russia, the Netherlands, Ireland, Austria.
The list
goes on. It's not sort of problem's a strong word, but what's Europe's problem as regards this particular ranking?
I mean, my take on this is it is really austerity showing. You know, Germany has lost a top 50 university and it's lost a top 200 university, but it's actually not done that badly compared to other parts of continental Europe. And Germany has had some more concentrated funding. It hasn't been hurt quite as badly by the financial crisis. But I think if you look at France, it's had a bad year. If you look at all the top universities across the continental Europe, they've had a bad year. But what's significant, I think, is Scandinavia has bucked that trend. And they have been receiving more generous public funding. They have been protected by their governments more in terms of funding in the financial crisis. I do think it's a pretty straightforward case of austerity.
In terms of R&D spending, it's pretty much the case that the best we can hope for in Europe at the moment is flat cash, is for it not to be cut. So that seems to be seen as a win. And if you contrast that with a huge amount being invested elsewhere, I think it's just quite natural that we would see this. I mean, there's a big debate going on again. They want to cut the Horizon 2020 budget, the European research budget, once they thought that was fixed. This keeps coming up again and again. People think that it's a safe, solid place to put the money, and then it comes down to the wire and it gets cut by politicians.
Mm-hmm. Well, sitting here in London, maybe we should look a little bit at the UK picture. The press release I've seen that we sent out states Oxbridge and London could end up as the last bastions of world-class education and research. I guess that's outside the US. I mean, Lizzie, you covered this for the magazine. Mm. What's the story here?
Well, in general, the UK looks fairly stable if you just look at the surface of it. 14 universities up, 14 down. But actually, if you delve into that a little bit, there's quite a pattern. We've seen some of the big civic universities outside of London and the South East have seen some falls. So Edinburgh, Manchester, Bristol, Sheffield, Warwick, Southampton, Nottingham, Newcastle. And then if we look over a couple of years, there's also Aberdeen, Reading. We're seeing a real pattern that Oxford and Cambridge are, of course, very solid at the top. And then we've got some really strong performances from London universities. King's went up, Queen Mary went up, Royal Holloway. And this reflects a concern that I think is probably happening across the country at the moment, really, that whilst London during the recession has stayed pretty strong and got quite a lot of resources, and it provides a centre that people flock to, perhaps some of the regions are suffering. And we can see that reflected in some government policies. The Technology Strategy Board, their catapult centres, 5 out of 7 of those are in London and in the south. And we've got no regional development agencies. These are all quite subtle things, but there definitely seems to be a feeling that there's a concentration of excellence coming towards London, and obviously it has that power to attract people from outside the country as well. So there is a real concern that this could carry on in this direction.
I think it really does speak to the sort of wider economic discussions going on in the country. You know, we've seen the retail sector is decimated up north, the housing bubble, the growth is all down in London and the southeast. The jobs market, all the sort of sense of any economic recovery, it's all in the southeast. And the universities, I think, play such a huge role in those local economies. They're the magnets for international talent. They're the magnets for inward investment. They have jobs on the ground in terms of the student spending. And I do think it's a worry. I mean, it's important to say that, you know, Manchester, Newcastle, Bristol, they're all still fantastic universities. But a long-term sense of decline, whilst the London ones are keeping strong. I mean, Imperial still world top 10. UCL's slipped a couple, but it's 21 in the world. LSE's up as well. Actually, I think of Britain's top six universities, I think all six of them are actually Golden Triangle, Oxford, Cambridge and London. Mm. So there's a real issue about the whole us and them, we're all in it together, social divide. And I think higher education, skills, innovation, research are part of that story. And I think it is really worrying.
Not just universities as well, of course. AstraZeneca relocating from Manchester to Cambridge, and many more examples of others doing similar. One thing that always attracts attention online, we'll inevitably get a lot of tweets from people in the what are called the BRIC nations, so Brazil, India, China, South Korea sometimes included in that as well. You've mentioned something about the East there, but what about the other two, the sort of South America and India, which I know always gets a lot of attention. Are they making gains this year?
It's been a bit disappointing, actually. We've seen Brazil creeping up. And they've suddenly had a bit of a drop, and I'm not sure, I can't quite put our fingers on it really, but there is a worrying sense that it's lost Sao Paulo from the top 200, Unicamp, Campinas, it's slipped as well. So there is a real worry about whether they were able to keep up. South Africa's top university is still in the 200, but that's slipped as well. Russia has fallen further away.
Yeah.
India's had a great year in terms of increased representation, but I think that's more about the Indian community recognizing the value of international benchmarks and coming into the rankings, submitting data. There's been a real push by the Indian government. I went out there in the springtime, and the Indian government said, look, you know, the Times Higher Rankings are the benchmark. We need to embrace internationalization. We need to hold ourselves up against international benchmarks. So India have had more institutions in the system, but they're still quite a long way off.
I think the same with Brazil. There were quite a few easy gains to be made at the beginning. There's an awful lot going on in terms of good research over there, but it wasn't really visible to the outside world. Now they've gone to a lot of steps, especially in those two big universities, to remedy that and to try and get into good journals, publish in English, have more internationalisation. That happened and they shot up quite quickly, but it's actually very difficult to keep up that momentum. I think it's going to be a lot harder now to keep pushing up the tables.
And also, there was a problem. I know there's an article by Lizzie that you should check out on the THU website when you visited Brazil and a number of institutions. It was one of the problems you pointed out was a lack, too much concentration on two huge institutions, not
yes.
enough for the rest. So
absolutely, their equivalent of London and the southeast is Sao Paulo and Rio de Janeiro,
yeah.
And they have some of the very very best institutions there. But I mean, Sao Paulo produces half of all of Brazil's academic papers and something like 45% of its PhD students, and that's, you know, one of 27 states. So they really have an issue to try and spread the excellence across the country.
I think Russia's interesting. It's really has fallen behind quite dramatically from the old Soviet superpower days. You know, the mass brain drain they suffered after the fall of the Soviet Union. But Putin has specifically decreed that X number of universities must make the world top 100. So there's frenzied activity. I think they want 5 in the top 100. They've got none in the top 200 at the moment. But there is frenzied activity. It does look as if there will be money. They've earmarked 15 institutions for sort of special funding. And I think there is moves to reform the career structures to allow people to attract international faculty, to relax the salary structure. So I think there's some fairly positive moves there. But the worry is, you know, you don't want to just chase the rankings. You need to actually look at serious improvement rather than gaining rankings. But there is at least some money and some political will behind ensuring more Russian universities are competitive. And what's interesting in the table is actually that there's two very small specialist Moscow universities do very well in our physical sciences table. They were too small to be included in the overall world rankings. They weren't producing enough volume of research for our data to work. But Moscow State University and two small specialists, physical sciences institutions, make the top 100 for physical sciences.
It's probably a good time to maybe ask quickly about the methodology. All rankings have critics. We've never shied away from that. But I know we're going to get queries about it. Perhaps I can point them towards this podcast and say that on it you have a few words to say about why these are more trustworthy than some of the other rankings out there. How do you ensure that these are the most robust?
Well, this is actually the 10th annual ranking we've produced now. So we've been doing this for 10 years. And we've learned an awful lot since then. We did change the system dramatically in 2009-10. We learned from early mistakes. You know, we produced a ranking that rapidly became very influential, but we thought it was a little bit flimsy, didn't quite stand up to the kind of weight that's being placed on rankings these days. You know, we know they're influencing multi-million pound decisions, they're influencing government behaviour, they're influencing student choices. So we had a massive consultation. We had a really honest, open debate for most of 2009, early 2010. We had a survey. We worked with our partners, Thomson Reuters, to ask people what they want from rankings, what they need from rankings, what are the weaknesses and the strengths of rankings. And then we had an expert advisory group to help us devise the specific indicators and weighting. So I think we've listened and learned very well from our 10 years of experience, as well as from our 40-plus years of being a magazine working and serving the higher education sector. And we've come up with probably the most balanced system. You know, we use 13 separate indicators. We capture the full range of a university's activities, you know, right from the teaching environment, which is neglected by other rankings, right through to research, knowledge transfer, and internationalization. So I think we've just listened, learned, and consulted. The most important thing for me is that we haven't imposed an ideal on the sector. We've worked carefully with the sector to say, look, what are the important aspects of universities that we need to capture, and how do you capture it? So I think I'm really proud that we do have something that is now increasingly being not just trusted by students and families, but being built into government sort of geopolitical analysis as well. So I think it's about listening and learning.
And there is a lot of data. There's 13 indicators, as you just said. And this year you're trying to make it a bit easier for people to find the statistics that they want specifically. How can people access and manipulate this data?
Well, I think we've got a multifaceted approach. The website itself allows you to disaggregate the overall scores. I think the overall scores are great in terms of the big brand, the sort of geopolitical side of things. But, you know, people want more nuanced data, so you can break down to our five broad areas. You can access individual profiles of the universities. We have the free iPhone app, which allows you to manipulate our weighting, so that makes the rankings really transparent. You can see the kind of influence that decisions about whether something should be weighted at 30% or 20%. You can see the differences. You can personalize the results. But this year, there's a really exciting new feature on the website. We've just launched in partnership with an American company called Find the Best. They have this incredible WYSI software where for each one of the world-ranked American and British universities, they've got pretty much every other bit of data you could possibly want to have on these institutions from public sources. So if you go into America, you can look at each university, you can find out all the SAT scores, you can find out how much money they've got, you can find out how much they spent on the hockey team, you can drill down to the most exceptional level. In the UK, you can look at the student satisfaction scores for every single student satisfaction question. You can drill into the finances. You can find out the gender balance of the students. You can find out the racial balance of the students. And the great thing about the software is actually you can pick out a handful of the institutions you want and put them head to head in columns and find out exactly what you want. So it's a fantastic tool, primarily for the student consumer. You know, Times Higher serves the sector, the senior administrators, the faculty, but the rankings attract huge interest from the student community and the parents. And this is an incredible step towards giving them, you know, unprecedented access to data at their fingertips. So we're really proud of that.
Sounds like it might make my job a little bit easier as well. That's quite handy. And another thing that just, like, again, digging down, you know, past the headlines, I think it's really interesting. There's a piece in our supplement which is written by one of our colleagues at Thomson Reuters, Simon Pratt, which looks at the specialist institutions, because, you know, obviously they're not included in the main rankings because they have too narrow a discipline focus. But I think that's something else that would be really interesting to have a read of. And we can look at the scores for, well, again, actually, London institutions do really well. SOAS, London Business School, London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. So, yeah, I think that's worth taking a look at too.
Yeah, that supplement, of course, will be distributed with every edition of the Times Higher Education. This week, you can also get, as Phil said, all the information on our website, timeshighereducation.co.uk. Click the rankings tab for the results in full. You can also follow the rankings on Twitter at THE World Uni Rank. If you're listening in China, we're also on Weibo. Search for Times Higher Education there. But thanks for joining me, Phil and Lizzie. And if you haven't already, do make sure you check out all the coverage online and in this week's magazine.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.